135 here on WGN, 312-981-7200. That's our number. Got a vaccine question or a question for Dr. Jeffrey Copen. He's visiting with us right now, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Lake Forest Hospital. Dr. Copen, we got the big announcement from the governor today. I guess the metrics look good. I know you're happy about that, but it's also our bridge phase. We're going into the bridge phase that you and I have been talking about. It's happening. He just kind of laid out the plans today. Kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. Bridge phase. You know, I still like Anna 4.5 better. I think it just has more character than bridge phase, but we'll take it because we know it's our idea.
Yeah, you couldn't steal the whole thing, right? You had to sort of like make it his own. I get it. No, I'm just happy he's doing it because I think it's going to be a welcome relief to everybody in terms of we know we're not ready to fully reopen. We know we need restrictions, but, you know, he's going to sort of look at the way things go here and judge, you know. Any words about when you look at the health data right now, what you're seeing, Dr. Copen, in kind of a big picture way?
Yeah, I'm thrilled. What we see right now, you know, we're still in a pandemic. We're not out of the pandemic. We have to remember that. By the way, that's why we still got to wear our masks like we keep being told when we go out. We're still in a pandemic. I heard the guy from the Tribune before the news, Anna, and it's true. We've plateaued in Chicago with the number of positive new cases. That shouldn't be a surprise. We're still in a pandemic. So we can't let our guard down. But as we've been talking about, the vaccines work, the numbers are down, and we can start opening up. Part of the bridge plan is 60% of certain venues' capacity. That's fantastic, right? I mean, you and I would have been happy at 20 to 30.
Sure.
So 60%, it shows how optimistic we can be about how well things are going. You know, I also saw that, you know, the expectation is the state of Illinois by April is going to be getting 1 million doses a week of vaccine. How great is that? You know, we've been talking about how we expected once we got into April, we would have many more vaccines, and it looks like it's really happening.
Yeah, it does. Now, I know the governor today said that everyone 16 and older everywhere in the state will be able to get a vaccine April 12th. I think that excludes the city of Chicago, which is on a different timetable. So I think people have to be mindful of that. But it certainly speaks to the expectation of the volume of vaccines is going to be here. And that'll lessen the frustrations that people have been having as they try to get those appointments.
Yeah, so but let's be careful again with what the expectation is, because we don't want to repeat the frustration that, you know, that we've had for the last several weeks. What's going to happen in April? It's not like there's going to be a date certain where everyone is going to be able to go get a vaccine on that day, right? We know that that's not what we're talking about. The idea is starting in April, everybody in the state over the age of 16 will be able to get in line to get a vaccine. Exactly how long that line will be and how long it will take to get the jab in the arm, that's all going to be contingent on what the supply of vaccine is and how efficient our vaccine centers can be. So everyone's still going to have to be patient, but we're getting to that wonderful day when we are going to be able to vaccinate everybody who wants to be.
Yeah, that's true. And I was talking about that yesterday on the show, too, because that March 29th date in Chicago, where hospitality industry people, restaurant workers, hairdressers, anybody's in the service industry, you're in hotels, you're in law, you're in media, banking, these clergy, huge areas are going to be able to start being eligible at that point. And you're right, it's going to be a flood of people. Not everyone's going to be able to get it on March 29th or even April 1st or even April 21st. I just, my concern is that you get the seniors and the people with underlying conditions, those most at risk, get their appointments, you know, in time, right? We want them to get it first.
Correct. And, you know, and that's what's going on right now. And that will continue. We're going to continue to have an effort to make sure everybody over the age of 65 is vaccinated. And that's not going to stop just because we get into April. There's still people over the age of 65, a lot of them, who've yet to be vaccinated. And it's critically important we get them vaccinated. But that doesn't mean that we cannot simultaneously begin to vaccinate the rest of the state's population. We can do two things at the same time. We really can. And again, the bottom line is we need to get sufficient vaccine to be able to do this.
Yeah, I thought of you when I saw these headlines early this morning when I first woke up about AstraZeneca. You talked to us on Tuesday. You were very concerned that the European Union or any of the countries within the EU were starting to pause their administering of that vaccine over some concerns about blood clots. You said then that you thought it was a pretty small sample. Now they've reviewed it, I guess, and they're giving them, I guess they're pretty close to giving them a green light. What have you heard about that, Dr. Copin?
Yeah, so I was hoping that by the time I went on the show today, the European Medicines Authority would have said, you can go ahead and start using AstraZeneca again. They have, and my guess is it will occur tomorrow. This is a gigantic mistake. I don't understand all the politics in Europe right now. This would actually be an interesting subject to discuss with somebody from the Council of Foreign Relations who understands Europe and Britain and Brexit, because it seems to me that it's all mixed up together. Now trying to convince a vaccine-hesitant person in France or Germany to go ahead and get the AstraZeneca vaccine, boy, how hard is that going to be, right? Mm-hmm. I wish they wouldn't have done this. I think they've complicated things in a way that they really regret now. And we know that Europe is just having a bad, bad time with this resurgence of the virus. So they're going to have to try to convince their population that they should go ahead and get the AstraZeneca, because that's the vaccine they have in large numbers currently.
Yeah, that was concerning for me, too. You're seeing new lockdowns in Italy and even Germany. And then here we are. The supply of the vaccine gets on hold. It's they're pausing it at a critical time. Hopefully they get that back up and running quickly, because I'm sure that'll really help them, Dr. Copin. Hey, can I ask you about the new guidelines for schools from the CDC? And I think it's on the Illinois Department of Public Health website, too, that it's no longer 6 feet. That is necessary of separation or social distancing, if you will. It's 3 feet is sufficient. Is that in all circumstances? What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying. And you're right. The Illinois State Board of Education has already made that statement. We know that's caused some controversy with the Chicago Teachers Union. There's plenty of schools around the country that have been doing 3 feet, and it's worked. I think particularly when ventilation is good, 3 feet it should not be an issue in a school. So that's the reason that the guideline has been changed from 6 feet to 3 feet. We also know from school leadership that 3 feet makes it doable to have in-person class. 6 feet's really difficult to get enough kids into the classroom. So I'm really happy that the people who have studied this are able to say the 3 feet distance is safe, we'll be able to have in-person school that way.
Yeah, you will, and it'll open it up for more schools, because some of the situations in certain schools are tighter quarters. You have smaller rooms, classrooms, and they were worried about being able to have enough space even to fit kids in there to do it. And the hybrid model, I don't know how long that'll last, but if you want to go back to full in-person learning, you'd need to be able to fit everybody in the classroom. And I think that's tough to do when you have 6 feet. So if they say 3 feet, that could make a real difference.
Yeah, boy, let's hope so, because we need our kids back in school. Enough of this distance learning, being at home. We really do need our kids in school, and we now know it can be done safely.
Yeah, I appreciate hearing you say that, because I do hear from so many parents who are saying that the distance learning is not working for them, and they were concerned about safety. But if you can do it safely, I think that a lot of parents and kids would welcome that opportunity to be back in the classroom. Hey, Dr. Copin, do we know much about reinfections of people who've had the vaccine? I don't even know if there's enough sample out there, but do we have examples of people who have been reinfected with COVID after getting the vaccine? Is that possible?
Yeah, so we knew that already from the phase 3 trials that the drug companies, the pharmaceutical companies, had to run to get their vaccines approved, that it would be possible to be reinfected. The good news is, when somebody is reinfected, and it's a very small number of people who have been vaccinated, people don't get sick. You know, at most, it could be like a sore throat or the sniffles. We're not seeing anybody get severely ill, needing hospitalization or dying, which obviously is the key thing. So it is possible. It's just, we believe it's very, very rare. As I've been saying, it's just such a good story about these vaccines. They really do work. It doesn't matter if it's the Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson & Johnson. These things work. They work really well. They prevent people from getting infected and getting sick. And it's looking more and more like the people who do get infected, who have been vaccinated, have a very small amount of virus in them. It's almost the best story that we could tell about these vaccines, mm-hmm. and the vaccines are holding up against the variants that are out there right now, and that's fantastic. I was looking today, you know, we've been talking about what's going on in Israel, because Israel's really become a laboratory for the whole world because of the number of people that they've been able to vaccinate. They've now opened up their outdoor soccer stadia to be able to have 5,000 people at a time.
Wow.
Which shows that things work. And the predominant variant right now in Israel is the British variant, the B117, and the vaccine is working. So that's a very, very favorable development, and it's something we should feel good about.
You know, can I ask you also about something else that's making news? I saw this in CNN this morning. The Wall Street Journal had an article about this, too. It's about Florida and how well that they had done relative to other states, even though that people were critical of them because they didn't do that serious lockdown sort of thing. They were more open for business. And when you look at the numbers, and even given the fact that Florida's got a high population of people over 65, older people, that they are nowhere near the top of the pack when it comes to the death rate. And they're far below states like, I guess, California and New York when it comes to senior deaths. And I just wonder what your thoughts are about why that is. Why is that? Why could that be?
That's such a good question, Anna. You know, we don't really know yet. It's going to take us years to fully unpack everything that's happened during the pandemic. Why is it that one state did well, another state didn't? How much of it has to do with the weather? For example, it remains humid in Florida much longer than it does in a place like New York. The density of where people live. I mean, just start to think about the differences that we know between someone who lives in Manhattan and somebody who lives in the Orlando area, right? It's very, very different. Somewhere within there is the difference in why the virus behaved differently, why people were infected at different rates, why the death rates were different. You know, I'm hoping that as we start to have some cooler heads about this and the politics can be taken out. You know, I know that Governor DeSantis in Florida, it's almost like he's taking a victory lap right now.
Right.
I wish he wouldn't. You know, he can be proud about how his state is doing economically, but they still lost a lot of people in Florida. A lot of people died. It wasn't a horrible situation that many of his political opponents predicted. But we got to learn from this. That's the bottom line. We have to learn from this so we can do better. And again, we're not out of the pandemic. We still have lessons that can help inform decisions we make now. And I think we all have to be concerned about the possibility of a future pandemic. And we need to learn all the best things that we can. So if Florida did some things well, let's know what that was. And if California did some things well, let's do that. And if there was a decision made somewhere else that didn't go very well, let's make sure we don't make that same mistake again.
Well said, Dr. Copin. I mean, that's what a meaningful and thoughtful summary of that whole thing, because it does go back and forth and reach political, you know, it gets to this political level of, you know, just people go after each other over this kind of stuff. And I feel like, hey, let's learn from those lessons. Finally here, I just have a minute left, but I want to ask you about this, because Pete Zimmerman, our producer, says his wife always complains that he walks too slow. And he was very concerned about this study that says people who are slow walkers are more at risk from the COVID-19. I don't know what you make of this one.
Yeah, I had to talk Pete off the ledge before I came on the air, Anna.
Good.
I wish I had the opportunity to read the whole study, but I suspect what they picked up on, this was just a big population survey. It kind of makes sense. If you truly walk slowly compared to someone who walks quickly, there might be a difference in your overall physical fitness. I think that's probably what this is. I noted that the that study was published in the International Journal of Obesity. So I think that probably gives us an idea what they were looking at. We've already talked before about how obesity is a huge risk factor not to do well, to get really ill with COVID. So I my suspicion is that's what they're illustrating here.
Okay. So he still should probably speed up when his wife tells him to speed up, though. Would you agree with that, Dr. Copen?
My advice to Pete was, whatever Mrs. Pete says, do that and all will be good.
Thank you. That's great medical advice. Thank you, Dr. Copen. It's good talking with you today.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.